Payola seems like a throwback to the 1950s, a couple of $100 bills tucked into a record sleeve whose contents move immediately to a disc jockey's turntable. But payola, turns out, is alive and well, and no longer quite so quaint. It's big business, with millions of dollars flowing from record labels to music programmers at hundreds of radio stations around the country. Now the FCC is cracking down. A settlement is expected to be announced any day now, and from what we've heard, the terms include $12.5 million in fines from the four biggest owners of radio stations and a side deal that would guarantee airtime on those stations for independent artists. One of the radio groups, Clear Channel, said no violations were found and that the company is pleased to settle in order to close the long-standing investigation. Later this hour, the Libby verdict and the vice president, Senator Obama's investments, and the presidential popularity in three states that will be critical in 2008. If you have questions for political junkie Ken Rudin, you can send them by email now. Our address is talk@npr.org. But first, payola. If you have questions about how it works or what effect it has on the music you hear and the music that becomes popular, or if you're in the music or radio industry and have had to deal with the culture of pay for play, give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And we begin with FCC Commissioner Jonathan Adelstein, who's pressed the payola inquiry. He joins us from the studios of WCBE in Columbus, Ohio. And nice to speak with you again.
Thanks for having me.
And so what's the deal?
Well, the deal is that we're in the last stages of negotiations of a settlement agreement to take payola out of the airwaves for the foreseeable future. It will include the largest fine in the history of American broadcasting. It will also include a side agreement that isn't part of the actual consent decree that would allow for the first time a special program for independent, local, and community-based artists to get heard on the radio nationwide.
Yet we hear in that statement from Clear Channel, we're just settling a long-standing inquiry. No violations were found. We didn't do anything wrong.
The investigation was ongoing and hadn't been concluded, so they certainly weren't found guilty, nor were they found innocent. But rather than to continue the investigation, they opted to settle. I thought that was best for everybody, because rather than fighting over who's guilty and who's innocent, let's talk about keeping payola off the airwaves. We established a new set of business principles going forward, how they will make special efforts to keep payola off the airwaves, and I think that should be more important than finalizing the investigation, per se.
Mm-hmm. So what was the mechanism of payola as far as this investigation uncovered it, and how will this consent decree change it?
Well, the investigation was really subordinate to the effort by then-Attorney General Elliot Spitzer in New York, who unearthed really a trove of evidence. I call it an arsenal of smoking guns, showing all kinds of money potentially changing hands. We saw emails where there was talk about big screen TVs, there was talk about cash, there was talk about all kinds of efforts that the radio labels, that the radio companies were engaged in with the record labels to try to influence the airplay. This agreement makes sure that every dime is tracked, every dime is disclosed to the public, and that going forward, they are going to try to make an effort to integrate local and independent artists onto the airwaves even more effectively than they have in the past.
Elliot Spitzer, of course, now is the governor of the state of New York after last November's elections. As you look back into his investigation and what you've uncovered as well, is this concentrated in any one part of the industry? Is this hip-hop? Is this R&B? Is this country? Is this rock and roll? Is this what's going on?
We really see it across all the different genres, of course. Most importantly, new music, music that's being broken, that tends to be a lot of contemporary music, the latest music coming out. It really infects, I think, many different aspects of the radio industry, and all the new music tends to be new music targeted at younger folks.
Sure.
Rock and roll and hip-hop and on down the line, country, everything was experiencing.
And the settlement, as what we've heard, you've described it as the largest fine, collective fine, in the history of the Federal Communications Commission, far larger than any indecency fine. Yet you could look at this industry, say $12.5 million split among the four largest groups of radio station owners. They could mark that off as the cost of doing business.
I guess you could say it's not that big, but it's really big for us at the FCC. perhaps we should have stronger enforcement, but this was the most that was ever agreed to in a settlement negotiation or even by a fine by the FCC. So for us, it's substantial. I think most importantly, it puts them on notice that this practice has got to end. The FCC is paying attention, and what they really have at risk are their licenses, and they know that, and I think they take it very seriously. And the reason they wanted to settle was to put this behind them and to say they're not going to be running afoul of the FCC rules.
And while these four record radio station owner groups, they would be, are there investigations of other owners?
There are. As a matter of fact, there was many allegations that didn't apply to the top four. I think the way that the investigation was conducted by the commission, we focused on the biggest four radio groups in the country. That is CBS, Entercom, Citadel, and Clear Channel. Began with them, and now we've established a real template that we can use going forward, because there are literally hundreds of other stations that there are allegations against based on the files we got from Attorney General Spitzer's investigation. I think we need to go after each and every one of the stations and give them an opportunity either to settle or to push the investigation to its conclusion and get to the bottom of each and every one of those cases, just as we do with indecency.
We're talking with Jonathan Adelstein, an FCC commissioner. If you'd like to join the conversation about payola, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email talk@npr.org. And let's begin with Mike, and Mike's calling us from Florida.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a Clear Channel employee, and I haven't been with the company for very long, and I actually don't work on the production side. But, you know, I'm questioning the ethics of the company and them settling. I really don't understand how that applies so much, and was wondering if you could explain to me, I'm on the advertising side,
selling advertising.
They did.
What was it they did, Jonathan Adelstein?
Well, I don't want to characterize it because the investigation was ongoing. Over 160 Clear Channel stations were mentioned in the back and forth on the investigation with Elliot Spitzer. There was emails going back and forth implicating 160 stations. Now, I'm not saying that each and every one of these is somehow involved in this or that we proved any allegations, but certainly there was a lot of allegations, and those are things that we'll never get to the bottom of finally, because we concluded the investigation with the settlement agreement. I believe it was about 143 stations that were mentioned in the Spitzer document. So we'll never know the final story, because one of the things about a settlement agreement is that it gets both sides off the hook in terms of having to provide documents or in terms of us having to finalize the investigation.
Mike, thanks very much for the call. Good luck with your career in radio.
Thank you very much. I have ethical concerns, but thank you.
Yeah, welcome to radio. Let's see if we can get a call in. This is Melissa. Melissa calling us from Newark, Delaware.
Good afternoon. I am an independent musician, and I'm in a band, and I've been doing this for about 8 years. While I applaud the FCC for, of course, nabbing these guys for what they're doing, and also in the settlement saying that they have to set aside airtime for independent and local musicians, I question just how much it's going to help musicians like me, who even when we're trying to get our music on independent radio stations like WXPN and Philly Local, it's still if you haven't toured nationally, and even though you're an independent artist, we still won't play you. So I wanted to ask your guest, what he felt about that, and how are they going to help local musicians that, we're not huge, but we're also not, we also don't play in our bedroom. We play all across the region.
And, so expand a little bit more on the side agreement, and also how this side agreement would be monitored.
The problem with payola is that it keeps small independent artists like yourself off the air. Instead of hearing the local sound, these big labels push acts that already have wads of cash behind them. And you hear more and more of the same. That's why we hear complaints as we go across the country of hearing the same songs over and over again, and radio sounds more and more homogenized. homogenization might be good for milk, but it's not good for radio. So what we're trying to do here is at least establish a small beachhead where independent artists can get heard, where small local artists can get on the radio, the way it used to be in the good old glory days of radio when small acts would get broken in a, say, Motown in Detroit. We'd get played on the radio there before it would go nationwide. That's how exciting new music gets started, and it's local artists like yourself that we want to get heard, that have been pushed aside by payola. So we're doing two things here to help. First, we're trying to take payola out of the equation. And second, we have this side agreement that would have the major radio broadcasters in the country committing to playing small and independent local artists in a way that they haven't before. Now, it's just sort of a little camel's nose under the tent. I don't think it's going to instantly transform the way they're looking at the smaller artists, but hopefully it will really work successfully in the business context, and it will get them started to thinking about how do we get local music and the local music scene reflected on local radio.
And how would they do that? I mean, are they going to have to program separate half hours of here's our weekly program on the indie scene here in our little town?
We gave them a lot of flexibility as to how they do it, but they've committed to us that they plan on making this work, that they're going to commit resources to trying to investigate and research the local scene, to trying to get good music on the air that people will like, and at the same time making it something different from what the normal radio fare is.
And
I mean, people, go ahead.
Yeah, we just have a few seconds left with you. And so, how are you going to monitor their compliance, and what happens to them if they don't comply?
Well, because this is a side agreement and not part of the consent decree, it's probably something that we're not going to monitor as closely as we would. I mean, certainly I'm going to be looking at this closely, and the representatives of the independent artists are going to be looking at it closely. But we're really trusting that they're going to do the best they can.
First of all, thanks, Melissa, for the call, and good luck. And we'd like to thank FCC Commissioner Jonathan Adelstein, who joined us today from the studios of WCBE in Ohio, Columbus, Ohio. Commissioner, thanks very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back from a short break, we'll talk with Mark Fisher about the history of payola and with the president and CEO of Giant Step Records about its present and maybe its future. I'm Neil Cohn, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the latest payola scandal and how pay-for-play affects what songs we hear on the radio and which make it big. We'll talk with the head of a company that promotes music to stations in a few minutes. But joining us now is Mark Fisher, a columnist for The Washington Post, author of Something in the Air, Radio, Rock, and the Revolution That Shaped a Generation. Mark, nice to have you back on the program.
Great to be with you, Neil.
And as you look at this latest payola scandal, well, this is cyclical, is it not? I mean, payola may be as old as radio.
Payola is actually older than radio, because if you go back to the days of sheet music, there were guys who went around to music stores, and they were called song pluggers, and they would pay to push their particular songs and get those to be put out at the front of the shelf, much as representatives for various foods go around to supermarkets and arrange for their food to be at the end of the aisle. This is something that's gone on in the music business and in radio from the beginning, and we've had these periodic moments when people come along and say, oh my goodness, someone's being paid to put something on the radio. Now, the problem is not payola. In fact, payola is what brought local and independent artists onto the radio back in the 1950s, when radio crashed through the color barrier, when Race Records, the early R&B, came on the radio. That was because of payola. Payola to DJs in the form of $10 and $20 gifts each week, in the form of a free car maybe, a mink coat for a DJ's wife, that sort of thing. Now, when there was a previous investigation into payola and it was declared a scandal, mm-hmm. The purpose was not to prevent corruption, really. The purpose really was to try to put that crossing of the color line, to stuff that genie back into the bottle. There was almost a backlash on the part of adult Americans against the fact that their kids were running off and listening to all this black music and were crossing the color line in ways that seemed dangerous. And so Congress reacted and said payola is a terrible scandal and we've got to do something about it. Unfortunately, the solution they came up with was to remove the power to decide what goes on the radio from the DJ and give it to the company that owned the radio station. And that's the root of the problem that Commissioner Adelstein and the radio companies were negotiating over in this settlement.
Also in the days of Alan Freed and other people who were found guilty in the payola scandal of the 1950s, there were local stations. There were stations all across the country who had different playlists than these days. One of the factors that really influences what happens on the radio radio is most of these radio stations, their playlists are programmed from central locations, in the case of Clear Channel headquarters, I guess, in Dallas.
That's right. And the promoters who used to go around to your local radio station and drop in and say, hey, look what's new, here are the discs that we have coming out this week, those folks find that they have very little access to local radio stations anymore. Because, as you say, those decisions about what music to play are being made at corporate headquarters for the most part, or at least at regional headquarters, rather than at the individual stations. And unfortunately, what we see is that those local artists don't have access to those promoters don't have access to the radio stations. This is all being done at a very large corporate level, and that is why, which is one of the reasons why we've seen such a diminution in the number of formats and in the number of songs that make it onto the air.
See if we can get another caller on the line. And by the way, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And this is John. John's on the air with us from New Mexico.
Hello.
Hi, John.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. Well, this happens every about 20 years. You know, there's a big payola scandal, and they try to do something. Unfortunately, it's never going to end.
Why do you say that?
There's always ways around it, you know. I've worked with record companies, worked with radio stations, and it's a shame for the independent artists because, you know, they don't have the money that the majors have. And now with all the radio stations being owned by, say, Clear Channel, Infinity, CBS, there's no more competition in the marketplaces anymore. Where all the mom-and-pop stations used to be, you know, you could get a start there and then maybe move to a, you know, major.
Or at least the payola was cheaper. Or at least the payola was cheaper.
Yes.
To get on the mom and pop station.
Right. You know, and it's happened on all levels.
And
unfortunately, that's the downside of the business.
As somebody who's
if you're an independent label trying to get started and you don't have the cash flow a major has.
Well, as somebody who's worked in the music business, have you ever thought about, well, you know, maybe $50 would get my song on the radio?
Everybody has.
And does it work?
Sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't, you know. It really depends on who, you know, you deal with.
Mm-hmm. Mark Fisher, it's interesting reading your book about the history of radio. One of the appalling things is how cheap it is to bribe disc jockeys.
Well, back in the 50s, it was a routine for DJs who made very little money in those days to supplement their income. And really, we're talking about $10 here, $20 there per week from a record company. And the DJs worked for several record companies, so it wasn't as if they were having exclusive deals. Nobody wants to put lousy music on the air. It's in the interests of both the record companies and the radio companies to put on music. The music business sees radio as a promotional vehicle for sales of CDs and of digital downloading in these days. And so nobody wants to put terrible songs on the air. The question is which good songs are going to get there, and will you get a wider variety of good songs there if you allow individual promoters to talk to individual DJs or executives at stations, or the way it's been done in recent years, as Governor Spitzer found in his investigation. Unfortunately, it's now kind of ratcheted up so that these large companies are charging record companies fees in the six figures just for the right to talk to the music directors at stations.
John, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Let's joining us now from the studios of KQED, our member station in San Francisco, is Morris Bernstein. He's the president and CEO of Giant Step, a music marketing firm that promotes both independent and major label artists. And Morris Bernstein, nice to have you on the program today.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good afternoon. Well, I'm on the East,
well, depending
West Coast,
on where we are. But how widespread is payola?
It's kind of like the white elephant in the room that is there and nobody really talks about. You know, when we market artists, and our job primarily is to break emerging artists, both from independent and major record labels, when we put our plan together, we don't even include radio because it's just not an option with the costs involved. So we have to look at alternative ways of getting the word out and breaking artists. Mm-hmm. And fortunately now, through the internet, there are a lot of alternatives. And this ruling might actually make the major radio stations become more relevant with people because they are not breaking new artists. And because they're not breaking new artists, the industry is not moving forward. And for the good of the industry, which is having some problems at the moment, let's just put it that way, things have to change. And maybe this is a potential move forward in that change.
Do you see, at least in the outlines of this agreement, details have yet to be announced, but in the outlines of this agreement, do you think that's a formula for change? The stations have agreed to play 844,000 half hours, as we understand it, of independent music.
Well, I think we've got to really drill down on what that all means, how many stations that implies to, and then if you look at each individual station, I haven't done the math yet, but what that actually means as far as how much independent music is going to be played. Then we have to look at when is the independent music going to be played. They're saying between 6 a.m. to midnight. Is that going to be some sort of graveyard shift where that's where you're going to be hearing it? I would like to see certain music on playlists played with the regular format. So as you're hearing a song by Justin Timberlake, you're then hearing a song by a new and emerging artist. And again, that's mm-hmm. the only way we're going to be moving this industry forward.
Mark Fisher, let me just ask you as an aside. The radio business tends to work these days as you tune in 24/7, 365. The radio station wants the radio station to sound exactly the same as it sounds every other time you tune in. They hate the idea, many of them, of going away for a special half hour of anything.
Right. They hate what is generally known in public radio as seams. They want everything to be seamless. Well, obviously, this agreement flies in the face of that. So if they were able to incorporate this independent music in with the big label music, that would obviously make a lot more sense, would be preferable for the independent artists. The radio industry is very much in turmoil right now. There's been tremendous consolidation with just a handful of companies buying up a majority of the stations in the country over the last decade, and yet radio has kind of lost an entire generation of listeners, young people who are creating their own radio stations on their iPods and through downloading. So there's a desperation that is driving radio to make this deal to say, we know that we have narrowed the kind of music we played far too much. What the FCC really should be looking at, rather than payola, is diversity of formats. You now have a situation in this country where five formats account for 70% of all radio. If you take adult contemporary pop, country, and talk radio, and then add in oldies and religion, that's 70% of the radio stations right there. That completely ignores about 40% of the record of the CD sales that are in all kinds of other genres of music you don't hear on the radio, whether it's classical and jazz or dance or soundtracks or gospel and on and on. That's music that can't get on the radio. I don't see where this deal really takes us any closer to changing that.
And do you, from that outline, Morris Bernstein, do you foresee real change?
Well, yeah, I think we have to be a little cynical because at the end of the day, these companies are in business and these radio stations want to sell as much advertising as possible. And in order to do that, they have to show that the numbers are there to sell the advertising and they don't want people to switch channels. And what they find is when people hear music that they don't recognize, they go and switch a channel. But I think they've underestimated the intelligence of the public. People want to hear new music. I'm not saying the formats now have to go totally new music, but you look at some of the artists who were on the Grammys this year, somebody like a Corinne Bailey Rae, not a typical sounding artist, but once she got on the radio, people liked her. So people want new stuff. They want to hear good new artists.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Dallas. Dallas calling us from Tallahassee in Florida.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have been in a band called Nuisance here in Tallahassee for quite a few years, and we went through a little catch-22. It seems like everyone's talking about all the other aspects of it, except for what benefits the artist. As an artist, I called the radio station to find out, or I called the record companies to find out, how do you become signed artist? Well, the record companies told me, well, you get regional airplay. So I called the radio station and said, okay, how do I get regional airplay? The radio station said, you get signed to a major label. Catch 22. Where does that leave the artist?
Morris Bernstein, does that sound familiar?
Very familiar. I mean, first of all, you are in a very competitive industry. everybody wants to be on the radio. And just because of this ruling, it doesn't mean to say they should open the floodgates. You need to create a buzz on what you're doing as an artist. And as I was saying earlier, there are many other ways besides just getting on the radio to create a buzz for yourself where you can become noticed. Radio is one of those stepping stones, and it's a more major stepping stone. So you have to look at all your alternatives of how to get yourself noticed. And you are vying for a spot that thousands of other artists and bands are vying for. And it's you've got to compete.
But with the consolidation of the radio stations, like, you know, your Clear Channels, your Cumulus, your people that are buying them up, they're taking those options away from the artists. You've only got one company to deal with in your local area.
No, I think you've got to look at other options besides radio. There's playing live. There's using the internet as a marketing tool to get the word out. If you become popular on the internet, again, you will become noticed by the record companies. Now, record companies, you know, they don't want to hear how good your demo is. They want to know how many friends you have on MySpace. If you tell them you have a million friends, they're interested. It's like, hold on a second. We've got something here. Now let's listen to the music. So, you know, you've got to become noticed as a band that are popping, and there are other ways of doing that besides just getting on the radio.
Dallas, good luck.
Thank you. I actually was curious as to whether or not there are umbrellas, company umbrellas, that record companies, radio stations, and record stores all fall under.
I'm not sure there are any record stores left, or there are fewer of them left anyway, but in terms of ownership, do you mean?
Yeah, kind of like, you know, it taking over the market. If the people that own the record companies own the radio stations and they own the record stores, that's really kind of cutting out anybody that doesn't want to play ball with the major company.
But they don't, I mean, that's not allowed. That's, you know, monopolies.
Vertical integration, I think,
right,
is the phrase we're looking for.
But,
yes.
Right. But what these companies, they are in business together to do business to further themselves, so they have alliances that make those things work, but they're not, it's not one company.
Dallas, thanks for the call. We're talking with Morris Bernstein of Giant Step and with Mark Fisher, columnist of The Washington Post, the author of Something in the Air. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get Alex on the line. Alex calling us from Miami.
Hi.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a comment. I wanted to say that I think we should focus on not the corporations. I don't think they're the real enemy. I think the government here is the real enemy. And I'm upset that artists, I'm a songwriter and an independent artist, I'm upset they're calling and claiming that this will help them somehow get on the radio. I think long term we want the government out of the radio. We don't want any regulation. We want this to be left to the corporations to decide who they want to or not put on the radio. And I just don't see why the government needs to get involved in any of this.
Let's go first to Mark Fisher.
Well, you know, the caller has a point in that there is a level of desperation and panic in the radio industry right now where they realize that they have lost their position as the leading edge in the music business. Radio is not really where music breaks anymore. They look very jealously at MySpace and Facebook and the music blogs and all of the internet radio stations and see that that's where the ferment is, that's where the creativity is happening. And so there is, at the ground level of radio, at the DJ level, a real desire to break out of the cubby holes that they have put themselves in over the last decade. The problem is that the radio companies, the companies that own so many radio stations, are so deeply in debt from having acquired all of these thousands of stations across the country that they've become very conservative. They've cut costs, so there are fewer people in decision-making places in local markets, so that the process, the structure for bringing local sounds and independent artists into radio is really not there the way it was a decade ago.
And but is Alex right? Do you think Morris Bernstein, that if the government got out of this, the market would settle this out?
Well, I mean, the government got into it for a reason, because the market wasn't settling it. Everything has become homogenized. They're not giving anything to the local artist. It's very much pay or play, because they want to get the music on that people know, so people won't switch off.
Well, I disagree, if I can interject. I think that they seem to be talking as if the purpose of radio was to push a certain kind of artist, whatever, you know, what they call independent artists. The purpose of radio, obviously, this is a company. They need to make money, and they need to judge for themselves what's going to make them the money and put on what they deem necessary to achieve that goal. I don't think there's a conflict between art and business, which is what they seem to be implying. I think that's a false dichotomy. So I don't think it is a necessary evil to have the government jump into this.
And Morris, I'd like to hear from you, but if you could keep it to 10 seconds or so.
Sure. Well, the end result is that the playlists have become so small and we're not developing new artists, so it's not helping the artists.
Alex, thanks very much for the call. I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. Our thanks to Morris Bernstein, the president and CEO of Giant Step, who joined us today from KQED, our member station in San Francisco. Our thanks as well to Mark Fisher, author of Something in the Air, who also works for the Washington Post. He joined us here in Studio 3A, The Political Junkie. When we come back, it's NPR News.